knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thoughts, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, his select, his party, the case of his knowledge, his argument, his path, his light, his proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, the 10th divinely appointed Imam. We find that His Eminence has these beautiful dialogues, and of course, you know, sometimes we think that the divinely appointed Imams, the Immaculate Imams, the only thing that they talked about were perhaps some akhlaqi discussions or some akhlaqi statements, some ethical, moral statements, and limited to that. Unfortunately, because we don't have enough knowledge or we don't really read enough about the divinely appointed Imams, or we don't study their lives in depth, perhaps even superficially, we find that we don't know a lot of things about these divinely appointed Imams. We find that when it comes to the theological, jurisprudential, philosophical sciences, the divinely appointed Imams, they had a lot to say about these matters. And of course, when we study their sayings and these different aspects of their lives, we find that not only did they have a lot to say in these kind of scientific fields, philosophy or theology and these kind of things, but they were experts in it. Of course, when we talk about an expert, this is a divinely appointed individual, and so they are at the peak of knowledge and wisdom as far as all of creation is concerned and all of humanity is concerned. They are the ultimate peak of knowledge and wisdom. So they are the masters of these sciences and this kind of logic and reasoning and understanding and intellect. So in this one conversation, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, talking to one of his companions, he talks about how Allah the Almighty disciplines the believers, or he kind of, I don't want to use the word harsh, but in a kind of a tough tone, you know, it can be said Allah is talking to the believers, and Allah, well, here Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam quotes the verse from the Holy Quran where Allah says, "And it behooves not a believing man and a believing woman that they should have any choice in a certain matter when Allah and His Messenger have decided a matter." And so then Imam Hadi alayhi salam continues and he says that Allah the Almighty has not allowed people to choose according to their own desires when a matter has been decided by Allah and His Messenger. Here I think it's kind of interesting to talk about this idea. One is that when Allah has decided a certain matter, you know, then mu'min or mu'mina, a believing man or a believing woman, they do not have the, you know, the absolute free will or the, you know, to be able to, according to their desires, go against a matter that Allah has done. So, for example, Allah says, "I've chosen the Quran to be your book." Well, we can't go and choose a dictionary, for example, to be our book. Or, well, Allah has decided that the messenger, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, is the messenger. But then that's it. We don't have a choice to go out of our own free will and say, well, you know, we want, you know, somebody else to be a messenger. Or when He decides a matter when it comes to imama, He chose Imam Ali alayhi salam to be the rightful successor. We don't have a choice when it comes to, well, we don't want to choose Imam Ali, we're going to choose somebody else. Now, this idea that, well, this happened, people went behind, well, this means that people, you know, they went against the commandments of Allah, they broke the commandments of Allah, and that, well, you know, logically, the repercussion is punishment on behalf of Allah, unless Allah wants to forgive, which that is up to His Eminence, the Almighty Allah. But here the idea that once something has been decided, it does not behoove, it is not appropriate, it is not good, it is not allowed for the mu'mineen and the mu'minat, the believing men and the believing women, to, according to their own desires, go against the commandments of Allah, because that will incur punishments. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Nowruz, the beginning of the Persian New Year, has always given energy and hope to people celebrating the event to observe Iranian traditions and enter the new year with a totally fresh spirit. The arrival of Nowruz for Iranians is tantamount to shopping spree and finishing their undone work. Millions of Iranians embrace the turn of the Persian year and celebrate the spring festival with many ceremonial customs waiting to be observed.
Well, everybody is busy shopping. It is time of Nowruz and the new year. I have bought sabze, sweets and fruits. We're waiting for the new year to arrive.
Sofre Hafsin is unique, symbolic for the Nowruz festivity and its tradition. The Hafsin spread includes 7 items, all starting with the letter Sin in the Persian alphabet. Iranians say there's a history behind each element, including serke, vinegar, symbolizes patience and immortality, sumac represents love and compassion, sib, apple, is a symbol of health and fertility, senjit, silverberry, is seen as a simulator of love and affection. Sabze, sprouts, symbolizes rebirth. Seed or garlic is a symbol of protection in the face of affliction. And samanu represents affluence.
This year it's different, as it has coincided with Ramadan. So we visit our family members and parents after iftar. And yes, it is great.
Nowruz is a unique opportunity for families and relatives to get together and visit each other. That is why Nowruz is regarded as a cultural bridge which unites people. This year, as Nowruz holidays coincide with the holy month of Ramadan, family members will most likely meet up after sunset or time of iftar when those who are fasting break their fast. Nowruz has begun and the Iranians are celebrating it as an ancient festivity to mark the first day of spring and the renewal of life and nature. This year, Nowruz has a different flavor to it as the Iranians are celebrating it with the holy month of Ramadan together, making it an exception. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
Earlier this month, the Maidenhead constituency in southeast England woke up to the resignation of its Conservative MP of 27 years, former Prime Minister Theresa May. Hers was one of up to 100 other well-established as well as younger MPs across the political parties announcing they wouldn't be running in the yet-to-be-announced next general election. Scottish Nationalist Party member Martin Day explains why so many are choosing to go.
For some, it's just age. They've reached retirement age and they're going. For others, they've got family commitments and they want to do that or other things with their lives. But for some, it's the toxic nature of politics. It's the toxic nature on social media where they're being trolled. And for some, they're actually being physically stalked and threatened with violence.
One MP, Caroline Lucas, the Parliament's only Green MP of 14 years, has cited the dysfunctionality of Parliament as her reason.
This Parliament has always been dysfunctional. I think perhaps one of the benefits of social media and modern television is that we see it more. It's not fit for this 21st century. I don't think it was fit for the 20th century. It's a Victorian construct, and it worked in their day. It doesn't work in our day. We should have electronic voting, we should have proportional representation systems, and we shouldn't have an unelected second chamber.
But while resignations are not uncommon ahead of a general election, it is different this time round, at least as far as the ruling Tories are concerned.
Well, you've heard the phrase, rats deserting a sinking ship. Clearly, the Tory ship is sinking, and that's why so many of them are jumping overboard and seeking refuge elsewhere.
Britons will vote in local elections in May. The Tories are 26 points behind the opposition Labour Party in opinion polls. Pressure is growing on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to call an early national vote.
As it stands, there won't be a general election in May, but one in the second half of the year seems more likely. Nevertheless, catastrophic results in the upcoming local elections could mean that Rishi Sunak and his Conservative Party's days in power are numbered. Saipur is up, London.
South Korea this week hosts the third U.S. initiative of the Summit for Democracy. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken suggested America could lead the world toward democratic ideals lacking elsewhere.
Vitalizing democracy will also require us to shape a technological future that's inclusive, that's rights-respecting, directed at driving progress in people's lives. As authoritarian and repressive regimes deploy technologies to undermine democracy and human rights, we need to ensure that technology sustains and supports democratic values and norms.
Corralled away from the venue, activists were joined by a South Korean lawmaker to question Washington's and Seoul's credibility, particularly in light of U.S. support of Israel's ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza.
Since Yoon Suk-yeol came into power, our democracy index has fallen by 19 points, and we're turning into a very backward country in terms of democracy. The United States, the enabler of the massacre, Israel, the perpetrator of the massacre, and South Korea are causing the endless decline of democracy.
Activists say the U.S. and South Korea have the blood of tens of thousands of innocents on their hands. Through the provision of weapons to Israel and failure to pressure Tel Aviv to end its genocide.
It's not the time for the South Korean government or the U.S. government, who are complicit in Israel's genocide, to discuss democracy. Instead, the Korean government should urge the U.S. and Israel to immediately stop the genocide, lift the blockade of the Gaza Strip, and end Israel's colonial military occupation of Palestine.
While a rift has appeared in U.S. support of Israel, concern is mounting that the Israeli military will increase attacks on the already besieged Rafah, where Palestinians await humanitarian aid amid reports of starvation. Like here, around the world can be found supporters of a free Palestine protesting against Israel's genocide in Gaza week after week. And here at this summit titled Democracy for Future Generations, a glaring question clouds proceedings. What will happen to the next generation of Palestinians? Frank Smith, Seoul.
The people of Afghanistan are facing immense hardship and sorrow, with the country finding itself at the bottom of the World Happiness Report rankings. The report, which evaluates nations based on various factors such as freedom, health, and income, has named Afghanistan as the unhappiest, where almost everyone is very unhappy.
Everyone here agrees with the result of the World Happiness Survey. We are unhappiest, and that is because of the ongoing poverty, unemployment, and lack of freedom and opportunities. Furthermore, girls cannot receive education, which further adds to the misery of Afghan families. When women are despaired, families feel unhappy.
I have been unemployed for almost 3 years. Since then, I have not had any income. My young daughters are missing their school, and this situation is so tough. How can we be happy? The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
The Afghan people have suffered decades of intervention and war, and they have not been happy. But experts say, under the rule of the Taliban, their circumstances have worsened.
As we speak, mental clinics across Kabul are receiving more patients than ever. As a psychologist, I witnessed the rise of mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. They have even led to suicide. If you take hope away from people, it will result in a depressed and dead nation. Hope is everything for human beings. If it is eroded, all progress will be lost.
The Afghan people are resilient, but the absence of basic human necessities and rights can crush even the strongest will. The international community and the ruling Taliban share a responsibility to bring some hope and light to the life of the crisis-stricken nation. Decades of foreign interventions and war have made Afghans the poorest and the saddest people on the planet. This nation has long yearned for peace and happiness, but it remains to be seen when or whether they find their lost dream. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The appointment of a new Palestinian prime minister at the current circumstances could deepen divisions as the Israeli war on Gaza rages. This is what some Palestinian factions revealed after President Mahmoud Abbas appointed Mohammed Mustafa, a long-trusted advisor on economic affairs, as prime minister and tasked him with forming a new government. Both Hamas and resistance movements, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and the Palestinian National Initiative, said that without national consensus, it's a reinforcement of a policy of exclusion and the deepening of division. We met Dr. Mustafa Al-Barghouti, Secretary General of the National Initiative. He told us that the most important thing is now a unified leadership.
We're not against the new government. We're against the way the government is being formed. We want a national consensus government, a government which is acceptable and accepted by all Palestinian political groups through a national dialogue between the different groups. And that is natural because, and for us, the main goal first before forming a government is how we structure a unified Palestinian national leadership.
Mohammed Mustafa replaces Mohammed Shtayyi, who resigned less than 3 weeks ago, citing the need for real change. Experts, however, say there had been mounting pressure on Abbas to reform the Palestinian Authority and initiate the establishment of a political framework capable of governing a future Palestinian state to take charge of all Palestinian territories after the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza ends.
First of all, that there was a pressure on the Palestinian Authority to make some changes, and that's why they complied immediately and appointing Mohammed Mustafa as the new prime minister. This is on the one hand. On the other hand, which is most importantly as well, what the Palestinians wanted. The Palestinians don't want another government to be the same. The problem here is with Israel. Are they, and the international community, are they able to really make the change and let this government to work or not?
The new prime minister now would work to form a technocratic government of experts. Abbas has also asked Mustafa to create plans to reunite the administration of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, reform the government, and address internal corruption. A real political change, not a change in words only, is what the people here desire. Moreover, the upcoming government faces numerous challenges, namely rebuilding the Gaza Strip, torpedoing Israeli plans to control the coastal enclave, and managing Palestinians' lives. Mona Kandil, Occupy Jamallah.
On Saturday, thousands of people joined a new rally in the Italian capital, organized, among the others, by the Movement of the Palestinian Students and the Association of the Palestinians in Italy. The initiative, dubbed Stop the Genocide, also saw the participation of high school students and families. People at the rally strongly condemned Italy's unwavering support to the Israeli regime.
Italy, that claims to be a democratic nation, is a country where the government goes against the people's will. Profits always come first, even when a genocide is taking place. I'm teaching my kids to never give up the fight and to never accept being submitted.
The Italian Defense Minister Guido Crosetto has recently said that Rome has continued to export arms to Israel despite assurances last year that the government was blocking such sales following Tel Aviv's invasion of the Gaza Strip. Some Italian media reports recently revealed that despite the Italian government's denials, the value of arms sales to Israel more than tripled in December 2023 compared with the same month in 2022. And December last year was the peak of Israeli bombardments on the Gaza Strip.
Western governments have been systematically supporting Zionism and Israel's criminal regime, notwithstanding the protests against Israel's crimes that have been taking place across the globe. Italy's support to Tel Aviv must stop once and for all.
A solution to the onslaught in Gaza could be found if the international community stopped militarily supporting Israel. Italy, on its side, has been actively arming Israel through companies such as Leonardo and others. If we don't make sure that the Palestinians' right to self-determination is protected, and nothing will ever change.
Earlier this week, more protests and initiatives in solidarity with the besieged Palestinians were held in several Italian cities, including Milan and Naples. Max Civili, Rome.
A growing strategic partnership between Azerbaijan and Iran in the energy sector on full display. A collaboration that promises to bolster economic development and energy security beyond the borders of the two countries and in the region, as described by the Iranian Minister of Energy and his visiting Azerbaijani counterpart. A highlight of this cooperation is the near completion of hydroelectric power plants on the Aras River, a vital waterway on the Iran-Azerbaijan border, with construction progress reported at 96%. The strategic importance of these hydroelectric projects extends beyond national benefits, signaling a move towards greater energy independence and regional cooperation, including the creation of an energy bridge linking Azerbaijan, Iran, and Russia by connecting Iran and Russia's power grids through the Republic of Azerbaijan. This follows decisions made 2 weeks ago during the 17th Iran-Russia Joint Economic Commission in Tehran to boost economic relations in different fields. Managing shared water resources for energy production lays the groundwork for more mutually beneficial cooperation, which is why the presidents of both countries will be attending the inaugural ceremony.
The projects are in the final stages, promising a significant boost in Iran-Azerbaijan bilateral relations, all in line with President Ebrahim Raisi's policy to expand relations with neighboring countries. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
The top annual analysis of global arms sales found that France has risen to the number two weapons exporter in the world. The gains have often been made thanks to debt from Ukraine, which has become Europe's largest arms importer. French arms sales have soared 50% in recent years and now comprise 11% of the global market. The world's leading arms dealer is still the United States, which controls a record 42% of the global weapons trade. Arms sales to Ukraine has proven to be big business, and it may explain President Emmanuel Macron's about-face on the conflict. 2 years ago, Macron warned that Russia must not be humiliated, but he's recently become one of Europe's leading anti-Russia war hawks. France's top three arms clients are India, which is the world's largest arms importer, followed by Saudi Arabia and tiny but rich Qatar. Africa is still reeling from 40 tons of illegal free arms drops France made in 2011 to support anti-Gaddafi rebels in Libya. As predicted, the weapons soon found their way to Syria, the Central African Republic, Ukraine, and elsewhere. This week, French Parliament approved a 10-year military pact with Kiev, which guarantees billions in more weapons deliveries. Russia continues to gain ground against NATO-backed Ukraine, which is an important reminder that some weapons are made to work under actual wartime conditions, and some are made mainly for sales and profit. Robin Mazaheri, Paris.
an unprecedented global movement gaining momentum. Initiated by veteran French lawyer and academic Gilles de Verre, the Army of Lawyers for Palestine now has over 200,000 lawyers of different nationalities on board and still counting, as he travels from country to country to promote his grassroots campaign.
We are witnessing a new movement in the world. The atrocities committed in Gaza are no longer only a matter that concerns Muslim countries. Far from it. Here we have a French lawyer that has started an initiative that brought together 300 lawyers from across the world in less than 10 days, and that number grew rapidly to 100,000. And now with the MOU that we have signed at the Iran Judiciary Bar, that number will be rising to 50,000 lawyers. With Iran on board, you can also expect lawyers from Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon to join in as well.
And an optimistic Gilles de Verre, who has already filed a complaint of genocide against Israel with the International Criminal Court, demanding an arrest warrant for top Israeli politicians, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
This is going to be a tough battle, without a doubt. But in just a few months, all these lawyers have joined us. This kind of solidarity is unprecedented. We have never seen so many lawyers join hands for one purpose in history. So this is a great sign, because it won't be enough to tell a judge, look, there's no many of us. Instead, we have to be able to defend Palestine with strong legal arguments. And by the looks of things, we have a solid base for that.
His South African fellow companion shedding light on the legal aspects of the matter while explaining how the case brought to the International Court of Justice by South Africa is also paving the way.
The ICJ order specifically spoke about creating a humanitarian corridor and a humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. The United States and Israel were saying that the word ceasefire did not exist in the ICJ order. But this is not true, because the humanitarian aid on the ground at scale cannot be delivered without an effective and immediate ceasefire.
It is very clear that we are witnessing a birth of new age. A new movement of justice-seeking people from all over the world is emerging, and that is why, while the South African government files a complaint, we see a grassroots movement also taking shape, a very unique one that has brought together lawyers who are seeking justice in the battle between good and evil.
And in the words of these legal experts, this goal is not far from reach.
Lawyers believe that we live in a new era in which this new global initiative will eventually lead to justice for Palestinians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. According to a lawsuit filed by civil rights bodies, New York City's Suffolk County Police Department has been sued for forcibly removing a Muslim woman's hijab and withholding it until her release. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. The New York City Police Department conducted a raid on a street in the borough of Queens just 48 hours prior to the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, targeting Bangladeshi street vendors who were selling Islamic merchandise. Based on a report by the city, the busy area in the New York City borough, known for its 12 vendors selling Islamic goods, was surprisingly lacking the usual crates and tables filled with religious texts, prayer mats, and hijabs on Thursday, 14th of March. Over the last 20 years, street vendors from Bangladesh in Jackson Heights, Queens, have regarded Ramadan as a crucial period for selling their goods and establishing connections with the Muslim community in the area. 55-year-old Muhammad Ashraful Biswas, who worked at a fried chicken restaurant before taking over the business in 2008 from his father, who became one of the first street vendors selling Islamic goods in Jackson Heights 2 decades ago after realizing there weren't stores retailing them, said, "Police did not come since about 2 years ago." Muhammad Biswas went on to mention a recent incident when police officers gathered vendors on the block and gave him a $250 fine for street vending without a license. He recounted, "He told us, if you sell again, we'll pick up all your business staff." Of the several vendors who were targeted, many have lost their only source of daily bread, leaving them struggling to make ends meet in a city that is one of the most expensive cities in the world amidst a cost-of-living crisis. The raid came ahead of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, a month synonymous with fasting and good deeds, when people come together to help each other with their difficulties in life. Street vendor MD Nasiruddin, who supports his family of five, including his 3 younger siblings, told the city, "My biggest fear is that I'll get arrested for working without a license. I'm afraid I won't be able to help my family or provide for them anymore. That's my biggest fear." According to Nasiruddin, it's almost impossible to get a vendor's license, and there is a wait list of more than 11,920 people already waiting to attain it. Apart from this, the license has since decades been capped at 853 citywide for non-veteran sellers. He started selling goods after being laid off from his position at a grocery store in 2020, during the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic. After exploring job opportunities in Jackson Heights, he eventually came across street vending whilst interacting with other vendors of Islamic products. Another business owner, MD Ali, a 63-year-old, said he has longed for the opportunity to engage in bargaining with his fellow Bangladeshi, Indian and Pakistani community in the locality. He pointed out that during the blessed month of Ramadan, he typically succumbs to the anticipated and never-ending negotiations as a sign of goodwill. He said, "Customers keep asking us why we're not open and keep asking us to open regardless of the ticketing situation." According to a report, the city currently accommodates over 20,000 vendors, a significant number of whom operate without the necessary licenses. This license is mandatory for individuals engaged in selling, leasing, or offering goods or services in public areas that are not designated as stores. It has been more than 2 decades since the 11th of September 2001 attacks, yet Muslims in New York continue to experience trauma relating to Islamophobia, which they attribute to the New York Police Department, the very institution tasked with ensuring their safety. According to a December 2023 report by the New York State Bar Association, the Israeli attack on Gaza has led to a dramatic increase in hate crimes against Muslims in the United States. American newspaper, the Miami Herald, has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a lawsuit filed by civil rights bodies, New York City's Suffolk County Police Department has been sued for forcibly removing a Muslim woman's hijab and withholding it until her release. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, and Emery Sally Birkenhoff Abadi Ward Mazel LLP filed a lawsuit recently on behalf of Marwa Fahmy from East Setauket, charging that she was wrongfully arrested by New York police in 2022 based on a false tip. The Council on American Islamic Relations CARE New York's legal fellow, Burhan Carroll, said, "The SCPD's hijab removal policy is inhumane, regressive, and clearly unlawful." The Council on American Islamic Relations New York asserts that the rights of Muslim Americans do not stop at the doors of the local police precinct. It said, "We will continue to fight on behalf of our community members who have been wronged by law enforcement. We hope this filing will result in justice for Fahmy and will protect others from future harm." According to the complaint, Marwa Fahmy's hijab was reportedly taken off during her arrest and was subjected to inappropriate touching by male police officers after she was forced to undress for a body search by the police department. She continuously pointed out that she could not be seen without her hijab, but her religious beliefs were disregarded by police officers as she was not provided with her hijab for a total of 9 hours. Nevertheless, according to the SCPD's Police 900.5-6, individuals are generally allowed to wear headscarves for religious reasons. The policy states, "Those who request to wear headscarves or simply head coverings for religious reasons should generally be accommodated absent unusual circumstances." Marwa Fahmy is now seeking compensation for a right violation and the emotional suffering that she had to go through. The ECBAWMM partner Andrew Wilson said, "What happened here was wrong. Religious practice and police practice are not incompatible. We are hopeful that this case can set a standard that requires Suffolk County police officers to protect the religious freedoms of New Yorkers who, like Ms. Fahmy, chose to wear religious head coverings." Marwa Fahmy's First Amendment rights were violated by the incident, as it violated her protection against unreasonable interference with her religious freedoms.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Kazimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahruddin was.
When we say Divan of Hafiz is a book of Irfan.
Mawlavi claims that this Masnavi Ma'navi is the interpretation of the Quran.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher. an introduction into the religious and scholarly life of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite dignitaries, ulama and scholars all across the world of Islam during the history of Islam. For today's discussion, I have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai. Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the biography and the scholarly religious life of one of the outstanding scholars and the Shiite scholars from the region Lucknow in India. That is Ibrahim Lucknowi, or Ibrahim from Lucknow, the faqih and the mufassir of the Shiite of the 13th century Hijra in India. Sheikh Rouhani, brother, let's start with you. Some ideal listeners are interested in knowing more about the biography of this man and how he was grown up in a Shiite community, especially in India. Let's be concerned with it, brother.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ibrahim al-Lucknowi was among the great jurists and exegetes, the Shiite exegetes and jurists of the 13th century, according to the Qamari calendar, who was from India. And of course, he had the permission of narrating the riwayat of Ahlul Bayt from Mirzai Shirazi and Sahib Jawahir Habibullah Rashti and many other scholars.
Yes.
That's why he was very much dignified and respected in the presence of the Shiite ruler of Lucknow, as it is said about him that even Nasiruddin Shah Qajar, the king of Persia, respected him a lot and gave him specific titles.
Sheikh Rouhani, thank you very much. And Sheikh Fadai, originally he is from India. Nowadays, also Lucknow and Hyderabad in India are the centers for the Shiite communities over there, and the Shia population live over there, that we could see the spread of Shia Islam all across the world, especially in the Indian subcontinent. So let's be a little bit concerned about the life of Ibrahim Lucknowi, his trips to Iran and different places of the Persian lands and his compilations.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ibrahim Lucknowi, as you mentioned, he had some trip to Iraq and Iran. And in Iran, he went to Mashhad and he went to Ray and was welcomed by the Iranian scholars.
Yes.
And even by Iraqi scholars because of his scholarly life. And I want to mention a point about his life that when we see the life of scholars like Ibrahim Lucknowi and the achievement that they had in their country like India, we can understand that the progress of religion of Islam is the result of works of some scholars like him.
Very good.
Usually we hear that Islam was spread by wars.
Mm-hmm.
For example, some wars with Iran, I don't know, with the other countries.
Yes.
After the bi'sa of Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, usually the enemy of Islam, they want to spread this problem that Islam is spread only by war and violence.
Okay.
So we have this question: what kind of war Muslims had with Indian people?
Mm-hmm.
Did the army of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam went to India at that time, mm-hmm. or even in the time of the caliphs?
Very good.
Of course not. There were a long distance between Hijaz and India. So how is it possible that we had this kind of scholars
yes.
in India? So Islam is a theology. Islam is a way of thinking, a school of thought. And thinking cannot be spread by war and cannot be stopped
yes.
by war. So when we see some person like Ibrahim Lucknowi, he, first of all, he went to some scholars like Mawla Kamaluddin Mohani,
yes.
and as my brother mentioned, has ijazah of riwayah from great scholars.
Yes.
So, first of all, he gained the knowledge from his professors, and then he started to teach other people and had a lot of students. That is the process of
yes.
spreading Islam.
That's right.
Not war and violence.
Yes, especially the tashayyu, we can say, We know that it was spread also in the history of India. There was a king named Yusuf Adil Shah in the year 895, according to the Hijra calendar. It was contemporary to the Safavid periods in Iran, and he respected them very much. He welcomed the Shiites very much. So many of the scholars and the dynasties and the Shiite dynasties were welcomed in India on that time. And as we said, Hyderabad still is the center for the Shiites. All in all, we could say that especially Lucknow, which is known as the scholarly capital of the Shiites of India, in that city.
Once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of it?
Sheikh Rouhani, one of the great achievements of Sayyid Ibrahim Lucknowi was, or Ibrahim Lucknowi was, his defense of the concept of Velaya in India, and over there he tried to somehow defend the history of Islam, legacy of Islam, the concept of Velaya in Imam Ali alayhi salam. What was exactly the story?
The story is this, that Britain Queen, actually, she ordered to not to say Shahada of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam in Adhan. That is why he resisted and actually rejected this order and commandment of the Queen.
Yes.
And sent a letter to her that they should be allowed and permitted to say this part of Azan in their Azan, though it is recommended, it's not wajib.
Yes.
Part of Azan. Then, of course, it is said that the Queen cancelled this order, and then the Shiite were allowed to say this sentence, Ashhadu anna aliyan waliyullah, in their Azan.
That's right.
So, of course, it was one of the things that he did, but he wrote also many great works and books, like Tuhfatul Mu'mineen, which is like Risala Amaliyah.
Mm-hmm.
In Urdu, it is published in India for the Indian Shiite, let's say, communities. And Aliya Waqitu Durar fi Hukm al-Tamathili wa Suwar. This is another work, Nur al-Absar fi Akhd al-Thar.
Yes.
This is in Farsi and printed and published in Lucknow. Ash-Sham'atu fi Ahkam al-Jum'ah. It is written for the King Nasiruddin Shah Qajar.
Fi Ahkam al-Jum'ah means what? The day of Jum'ah, or it is
Salat or prayer?
Salat al-Jum'ah, prayer, yes. Of Jum'ah. That's right. Okay.
That's why it's called Al-Lum'at al-Nasiriya as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said that even Nasiruddin Shah Qajar gave him the title of Hujjatul Islam when he came to Shah Abdul Azim, I think.
Yes.
He was actually welcomed,
right.
Yeah, and embraced by the king of Persia at that time, and was given this title, Al-Hujjatul Islam.
That's right.
So, yeah, Al-Bida'atul Musjad in the interpretation of Surah Yusuf, and also the Da'imul Iman. There are many other books that are written by this great scholar, Ibrahim al-Lucknowi,
yes.
Though he just lived 48 years,
mm-hmm.
but he wrote lots of books that is really appreciated.
Sheikh Falai, any point regarding the defense of Velaya in India from the side of Sayyid Ibrahim al-Lucknowi or Ibrahim al-Lucknowi?
Yes, as my brother mentioned, by that letter he could gain back
yes.
the sentence, and maybe this question can be paused that, so was it wajib to do that?
Uh-huh.
Of course, it is not wajib.
Yes.
But all of our scholars believe that this is the sign of being Shia.
Yes.
You know, if Shia at that time were forced not to say that, it means that gradually Shia should be eliminated from the society. And he could understand that. He could understand that very well, that yes, this is a conspiracy against Shia.
Yes.
And that is the beginning step.
Mm-hmm.
If they could be success, if they can be successful to eliminate this part of Azan,
yes,
for sure, in the next step, they will go on. So he stopped the first step. And this is not just defending a sentence. This is defending Shia.
Shia world.
This is defending Shiite society.
Yes.
And I want to say that what is the reason that he could be successful at that defense? One of the reasons is the good relationship that he had with the kings.
Mm-hmm.
Whether with the Shia kings in Lucknow,
yes,
and the British queen, which is not Shia.
Or even the Shia king in Iran, you know.
In Iran, that's Shia right, king in Lucknow, yes, Shia king in Iran,
yes,
and even the queen in Britain, which yes, is not Shia and is yes, not Muslim, and usually we know them as the opponents and yes, enemy of Islam.
Okay.
But by the means of having good relationship and respect, he could get that back.
Yes.
So that is one of his achievements
right,
to defend Islam with good relationship with the politicians.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding his life. As we said, Shiite Islam was spread all across India by the achievements and the struggles of such people. There are still so many outstanding scholars from India who tried very much and struggled hard in order to spread Shiite Islam over there. Inshallah, we get to their lives in our coming session of the program. The teacher, Ibrahim Lucknowi, passed away at the age of 48 in the year 1307. His body was taken into Husseiniya in the city of Lucknow, and he was buried beside his father. May Allah bless the soul of this outstanding man. Thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. We hope you enjoyed it. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.